I'm just really grateful for Jim and Patrice and Carrie for being here today. So Jim is from the county, and he does the inpatient outpatient mental health system for 30 years. He has participated in 10 years as a patient rights advocate in Santa Clara County, and has been the housing coordinator here in Santa Cruz since 2008. So Patrice is working with Front Street, Inc., and she's the supervisor of the housing support program since its expansion in 2009, a team member of the County Interagency Housing Support, and formerly she was the program director of Opal Cliffs Social Rehab and Willowbrook Residential. So Opal Cliffs is no longer a social rehab. We actually don't have social rehabs here anymore, which you can read more about in that handout. But she's a licensed occupational therapist and certified RAP facilitator. And Carrie is part of Encompass, and she is the property and asset manager for Encompass. And I have to tell you, I had the pleasure of talking to them last week and was very impressed by their compassion on this topic, and I'm just really grateful that they're willing to come and share with us. Housing is such a big topic, and so for this conversation, I really hope we can focus on kind of like what's possible now. And for me, that helped me plan. You know, I know that there's, you know, Santa Cruz is one of the most expensive places to live in the world, and it affects us all. Even teachers and service care providers, they're having trouble living here. So when you're trying to find homes for people with disabilities, it's just so competitive. So it's really a bigger question, and Pam is here. Maybe she can talk, if we have time, at the end of the presentation, more about what's possible coming up in the future. But for this conversation, I just kind of want to focus on kind of the state of the union for right now. So with that, I have asked them to address a few questions. So how do you get, describing the housing, how do you get on the waiting list, who provides the housing, what kind of supports are available, what's the wait time, what's the costs? So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the panel. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm Jim Straubinger. I'm the housing coordinator from County Adult Mental Health. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for coming. Thanks to Naomi for having us here. Thanks to Patrice and Carrie for coming with me. One of the strengths of our program, I think, is the good people doing the work, and that we work so well together. We work closely together, and that. Yeah.
And telling us your last name.
Straubinger. 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 So as the county housing coordinator, I help coordinate placement and referral into the supported housing and coordinate the work of the county treatment teams with the contract housing support teams. I want to spend a few minutes giving a little basic background information. It may be something some of you already know, but it's just so we're all starting from the same place. You know, the county's treatment work is divided into treatment teams. The county has a recovery team in the North County, South County team with case managers, doctors, therapists. There's an older adult team, transition age youth team, and a team called the MOST team that works with people on mental health probation, people on probation with mental health terms. I think to talk about mental health housing, it's important, just as Cheryl was saying, to see mental health housing in the context currently of a larger affordable housing crisis and a homelessness crisis that we have our particular version of here in Santa Cruz, in the Bay Area, other places around the state and around the country. Housing and affordable housing is a big problem now. So part of that is a mental health issue, part of it isn't, but we're doing what we can to get mental health clients into appropriate affordable housing. I wanted to mention a little bit about Borden Cares. It's in the handout. Front Street operates most of the Borden Cares. The Borden Care is a licensed residential care home. They have 24-hour supervision staff. It's room and board, and they store and dispense medications. So it's a higher level of care. It's a supervised setting. We have the Front Street Borden Care in Santa Cruz, Opal Cliffs in Capitola, Wheelock in Watsonville. and Willowbrook in Ben Lomond. Those are all operated by Front Street. There's also a privately owned board and care in Felton called Rose Acres. And there are other board and cares for older adults over 60.
Excuse me, sir, do you have that information handout? Because I didn't get it.
It's up front,
I believe.
I think it's on
the table.
Okay.
So, you want this one?
Oh, sorry, I think I have it. No,
okay.
I have the featured volunteers.
Okay.
I'll get it later. Thank you.
So what I'm hoping to do is cover a few things and then let my partners talk, and then if there are things we want to go back to, we can have questions. And I'd much rather have a discussion than give a speech. In board and care, many of the clients are on conservatorship, but not all. Most of the clients have representative payees to manage money. One of the things about board and care is that most everyone has a roommate. So for an adult to have a roommate, it's not attractive to most people. And also, most of the SSI that a person gets, the board and care rate is $11.45 currently. Most of it goes to the facility. So people in board and cares have a roommate, very little spending money. It doesn't make it attractive to people. That's the level of care some people need, or if it's the place some people land for a period of time. But it's not where people tend to want to stay. Some people have been in board and cares for many years, and that's their home. So it is permanent housing. There are wait lists for these board and cares. The board and cares stay full. There are wait lists. The county has a weekly meeting to prioritize and organize movement of clients in the system from the locked facilities into the subacute settings that you've talked about in previous meetings, the El Dorado Center, Telos, and then also into, there's a dual diagnosis substance abuse treatment program in Watsonville called Casa Pacific, and there are mental health beds at the River Street Shelter. So the movement between those facilities is prioritized and coordinated because everything is full and there are a lot of people waiting in different places to get somewhere. Cheryl mentioned transitional housing. Transitional housing is intended to serve as a bridge between a treatment setting or homelessness in the homeless system and permanent housing. It's a chance for people to learn, relearn, practice, demonstrate independent living skills, and further stabilize. The Stanford House that closed recently was a transitional housing program. People stay in transitional housing 6 months, a year, 18 months. The idea is that you get ready and move on to permanent housing. The problem has been there's often not permanent housing to move on to, so people can get stuck in places because they're ready to go, but there's no place to go. The Opal Cliffs and Darwin House closed some years ago. Those were a similar kind of program, social rehab program. Social rehab programs are staffed like a board and care, more expensive to operate, more it's a supervised setting. There's not currently a transitional housing program in the mental health system in Santa Cruz. There's a transitional housing program for homeless at the Coral Street lot. That's the Page Smith Community House. Transitional housing programs go away partly because of financing, and I think also thinking about things changes. Transitional housing has its place, and it can be useful, but the thinking has been that it's better to spend money on permanent supportive housing, get people into housing, and help them to succeed there rather than spend money on temporary programs. So I know, like, the money that flows from HUD, Housing and Urban Development, into the homeless system, they're increasingly focused on permanent supported housing for chronically homeless people, and less favorable toward transitional housing. So we don't have transitional housing right now. Supported housing is one of the main things we want to talk about here. The supported housing in Santa Cruz is operated by Front Street Incorporated and Encompass. They're going to have a chance to talk about their programs. I think between them, there are about 175 spaces, roughly. These are mostly shared apartments and houses. Everyone has a private room and share common space, kitchen, bathroom, living room. Supported housing, the concept of supported housing, combines understanding sensitive property management, who are prepared to deal with the issues that come up in a setting like this, rent subsidy to make housing affordable. Affordable housing is generally considered 30 to 40% of income. And support services that are available to people, but that they can't be forced to accept. So that's supported housing. Services include case management, medication support, a visiting medication nurse if that's needed, occupational therapy, peer support, vocational counseling. I should mention we have another partner in our housing support, and that is Community Connection, and they employ our employment specialist and our peer support worker work for Community Connections. They're not here tonight. I'm going to let Patrice and Carrie talk about their programs. And go on to the next thing, MHSA housing, the Mental Health Services Act. Remember Prop 63, one of the things that it funded was the development of mental health housing, which is expensive. Developing housing and developing housing in Santa Cruz, it's expensive. Our MHSA housing funds, we funded 5 units at the Bay Avenue Senior Apartments for older adults 55 and up, 5 units at Aptos Blue, which got some press at the time that was opened, and 5 units at the newest MHSA project, Lotus, on Bromer, and that's operated by Encompass. Each of these projects has a different property manager. We can get into that more if you want. But
Jim, I apologize for interrupting. Sure. Is that on here somewhere that you're talking
I don't think
about?
It is. I'm going right off the form.
Okay.
That's why I'm here, though.
Yeah.
So that's the for MHSA housing, the applicants have to be determined eligible for case management, but they can't be made to accept it, and homeless or at risk of homelessness. And there's the wait list for the MHS for these MHSA projects is maintained by the county. Currently, maybe 25 or 30 people on that wait list, but there's not a lot of movement. People get into apartments, and that's, in a way, that's good because people get into their homes, and it's their home, and they're doing well, and they stay there. But on the other hand, if there's no movement, there's no one getting off the wait list. Yeah.
Does this have anything to do with the Housing 8?
Section 8. I'm going to get to that. No, it's different than Section 8. You can... this has its own subsidy built in, so mm-hmm. Our units at Bay Avenue, Aptos Blue, Lotus, all affordable at 30% of income, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah,
30% and where do people go to sign up for that?
You can call me at County Mental Health, and you have to be assessed to be eligible for case management. This becomes a contentious point because, you know, many people get services at County Mental Health, and they are what we would call meds only. They see the doctor, they take their meds, they do pretty well. They're not assessed eligible for case management. So that becomes an issue. So you have to be eligible for case management and homeless or at risk of homelessness. And these things are, HUD has definitions. The MHSA, the Mental Health Services Act, has its own definition, which is a little broader and gives us a little more discretion. Yes?
The units in Capitola, they're conversion of existing units, correct?
Yeah, that's
the... The other ones were new construction?
Aptos Blue was new construction. Bay Avenue was rebuilt from an older senior complex, and Lotus was also rebuilt.
Oh, yeah, completely reconstructed.
Completely reconstructed. It's nice. I should also mention, as you may have seen in the news, there's a new initiative related to the MHSA that was just passed by the legislature, the No Place Like Home initiative. We were just talking about this earlier. The state has decided to repurpose some of the MHSA money that goes out to the counties, pull it back and what you would call monetize it to be able to sell bonds. And they're creating a $2 billion fund to construct new permanent supported housing for chronically homeless people with mental illness. So, and it's good since they have this money, you know, they're creating bonds out of future MHSA revenue to get a big pot of money so they can do something now. But when they, you know, that's money then that doesn't come to the county and get spent on something else. So, but you, as I,
it's actually existing money that's in services right now that we will have to redirect to the state and then participate in a competitive grant process to try to get some of the housing money for Santa Cruz County. So we have the money already invested in current services that we have to now defend. fund to give the state this money to. Want you to all understand.
See, as the housing coordinator, when I talk about it, it sounds like a good thing. But when Pam talks about it, it doesn't sound so good. But you can only, as I often say to people, you can only spend every dollar once.
Right.
And I'm talking with people about budgeting. You can only spend the dollar once. Then we also have people living in more independent housing, not supported housing. Doesn't have the built-in services, doesn't have the built-in rental subsidy. When you realize the basic SSI rate is $889, and think about where would you live if you had $889 a month total? It's difficult. So market rate housing, not affordable to people on SSI. I think we all know that. Residential hotels like the Palomar downtown for a single room occupancy room without full cooking facilities, private bath, $600-$700 a month. So people do that. People pay it. People on SSI, we have many clients live at the Palomar, go to the food kitchen. And
is there a waiting list there?
Yeah.
My son mentioned that to me.
Yeah, the office is up in the mezzanine in the Palomar. The manager's name is Fred. He's a nice guy. He will tell you, he used to say 3 months. Lately he's been saying 6 months wait. And their wait list is not, I don't think, the most formal, crisp, and precise thing. So you want to go in and talk to him, put in an application, and check back. Yeah.
So the big problem with SSI is if you help anybody on SSI with any kind of financial support, they take it away. Correct?
So yeah.
How
do we get around that?
That's a different meaning. I would say I'm knowledgeable about that, but I'm not an expert.
No, no, that's all I'm asking. Sir?
Look into a special needs trust.
Yep. That's what I'm talking about. Right there. So if you set up a special needs trust like he's talking about, where a group of us got together, bought a house, right, and then provided it as a low-income unit, can we do that? And then they get charged, you know, the $500 or whatever they need out of SSI to help support it. But we create effectively our own mortgage bond to buy a subsidized unit as a nonprofit trust. Can you do that?
I think that there's probably a way to do that. Mm-hmm. I'm not able to give you legal advice on exactly how to do that. It sounds like a good idea. Anything like that, then the devil is in the details. And you have a great idea, you have to figure out how to make it work and make sure that you know all the rules.
I'd like to have a meeting. Anybody wants to join, I'd like to figure out how to do that.
Yeah, how can we exchange some contact info?
We'll do that at the end of the meeting.
You know what? If you have that form here, we'll contact you and or help organize that meeting if you like. If you don't, unless you want to be in
person. You can also do indirect funds. Like you can buy food if the money never comes to the client.
Right.
So there are ways to support that person without them having SSI taken away.
Food stamps? If you're on SSI in California, you're categorically not eligible for food stamps because the state of California supplements the federal SSI rate. That's why sometimes you see it called SSI, SSP.
Stamps, they can't give you numbers.
That's right.
So food card as a gift?
As long as the money doesn't come directly to them.
No, it's just
it
can't be in time.
That's correct.
You can subsidize things, you can pay a PG&E bill, you cannot give to the individual's income. That affects their SSI.
Yeah. So there's other ways you can help support that person without jeopardizing their income.
Sounds like you could pay their rent.
Yep.
That reduces their SSI for $600.
Yeah. That I'm not 100% sure. I don't believe you can.
I don't think you can. Other things that are roughly affordable, if you're familiar with Craigslist and you search on Craigslist for rooms for rent, you can find rooms for rent in shared settings, like a supported house without the support, the place where students would live or young workers, where you had a room in a shared house, $500, $600, $700. That can be roughly affordable, but it can be challenging for our clients to get into a setting like that and to make it work. It's challenging to live with, you know, with other adults that you don't know. It's challenging for any of us. So that's financially doable, but it can be challenging. So you have to think about rent subsidy. What makes housing affordable? The Section 8 program that we hear so much about from the Housing Authority, they call it the Housing Choice Voucher Program. That's their main rent subsidy program, and it subsidizes rent to affordable level, 30 to 40%. Starts at 30, it can go up to 40% of income. They have payment standards, a maximum amount of rent that they will pay total between the clients, 30%, and what the Housing Authority pays. The problem with Section 8 is that wait list has been closed for years. There are 10,000 families on the Section 8 wait list. And people who are getting application packets now, after they U-turn in a pre-application when the list is open, applied before March 2009. So that tells you the state of affordable housing.
And now it's closed. Right?
And the wait list is closed. You can't get on the list. There are other voucher programs, and this makes it a little confusing. There are HUD-VASH vouchers for veterans. These are waitlist preferences and money that's directed to. There's a big effort to end veteran homelessness in particular. There are shelter plus care vouchers that we have some access to for chronically homeless people. Chronic homelessness, risk of homelessness, all strictly defined by HUD. And you have to meet those criteria. If you've heard of the 180, it was 180-180, now it's 180-2020, Big House the Homeless program that's doing such good work. They have access to vouchers called Disabled and Medically Vulnerable. So they're targeting to house. They assess people to see who's the most at risk on the street and can direct housing assistance to those people. I'm saying they're vouchers. To add one more layer to this, there are also project-based Section 8 units. HUD invests money into properties when they're developed so that there are units that are subsidized on site and the subsidy is with the unit. So you move in, you have the subsidy, but it's not portable. They also have wait lists that open and close. If you're on the Section 8 wait list and you're getting near the top of the Section 8 wait list, they send you announcements of availability of project-based units that you can consider. If you move into a project-based unit off the Section 8 wait list, you have to stay in it a year before you can take your voucher and be portable. That can be risky. It's on the one hand, when you get the voucher, it's hard to find housing, so the project-based unit is attractive. But if you're not sure you're going to be able to stay there for a year, you're taking a risk. So that's a difficult decision sometimes. Yes?
My question is that I have a daughter that has been in a mental hospital 3 times, out. She refused to take medication. She's now supposedly on medication, showing improvement, but has no place to go. I can't have her because we'll both succumb to medication. It won't work. And she has exhausted her family, her friends, everybody. But I feel that there's potential that she can get back, because she was doing okay for a long time and then had postpartum depression that she refused to treat. And so what do we do about those people?
Well, we need more housing. One thing that your daughter could do is apply with Encompass and get on their wait lists and the applications here. Encompass Community Services, we have the applications here. That's mental health supported housing, mostly shared settings with private room, but it's affordable and it's a place to start.
Thank you.
Yes?
Quick question, just a quick one about the Section 8.
Yeah.
Because I know the waiting list you said is the top
closed.
Years, basically. But are landlords required to have a certain number of units devoted to that? No, because I see on Craigslist,
no Section 8. I'm getting to that.
Everything I click on, that's
I'm getting to that.
Okay.
I'm getting to that.
Question?
Yeah.
There was a time, and I don't know if it still is the case, there was a time when the Housing Authority earmarked a specific Section 8 vouchers for mental health clients. That's how my son eased into one, luckily. But
they,
they're no longer they
don't,
doing that.
They don't have that. They don't have that preference anymore.
They don't.
They have we have had shelter plus care vouchers, which is a kind of a similar thing.
You
but
give out vouchers. In fact, I did last month. The mental health client find housing. They had 12 vouchers that they would give to them. They did have that program. I think last month. I only know because I had a room available and I had people calling me. So if they had it, if they found a place. There were vouchers there, they were giving out.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. I mean, they did. One person actually had a person call me, a caseworker.
Yes.
Going back to the vouchers, the part of the Shelter Plus, how do individuals access those?
Our Shelter Plus care vouchers, currently you have to be chronically homeless, which is homeless continuously for a year, or I think it's 4 episodes of homelessness in 3 years, totaling 12 months, and then there are rules about how far apart where you've been in the interim.
But to which agency do they go to? Like,
you have to be referred by a case manager for the Shelter County Plus care vouchers that we have, County Mental Health. But you have to be referred by a case manager. And we'll get to that. I wanted to mention in-home support services. In-home support services is a separate program that can fund private workers to help people with household tasks, to help them maintain their housing. Things like housekeeping tasks, self-care, laundry, cooking, shopping, transportation to medical appointments. In-home support services, I don't think it's on there. And this is not my handout. In-home support services has had their budget cuts with everyone else. Their process can be slow. The application process can be a little slow. It involves a social worker coming out to the home to do an assessment. And the way that this program works is that they authorize hours, but then the disabled person is the employer, and they can get a list of workers, but they have to hire their own worker and sign time cards. So many of our clients need a lot of direct hands-on support to get this set up and keep it working. So it's less than perfect, but that's what we got.
So my problem with that, as a landlord,
is
that if the patient, like this woman here, who has a daughter who goes off medicine, if my tenant had been off and on medicine, hospitalized in a year, 3 different times, her fourth and final hospitalization has lasted 4 months, she had an IHSS worker, but since she was hospitalized in another county, they now tell me that she lost her IHSS hours because she no longer lives in Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. So now she's supposed to come home and reapply. Now, IHSS workers would make her independence possible. And without it, her chances of success are nothing. In my mind, she really, to take her meds, she needs to be reminded.
I think that's a situation that I can help address.
I hope so, because I want her to make it.
Yeah, so do I. I want to put in a quick word for Second Story. You're familiar with the Second Story program. Mm-hmm. It's a peer-run respite and support program. And they're good people. It's a really good program. It's a good addition to our system. And it allows people to get a break from their housing if they're having a hard time. It helps people to maintain housing.
Jim, that's just good for 1 week.
Yeah.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
It was 2 weeks.
No, it was
now
2, then it was reduced to 1.
Because
there's
such a need for it.
Let's talk a little bit about housing search. So we're talking about vouchers. Vouchers aren't units. And as some people have mentioned, you get the voucher, you have to find a unit. And it's difficult to find a Section 8 unit. You can search. There's not a lot listed on the Housing Authority website. If you look at their listings, there's not a lot of listings there. If you search on Craigslist, many of the listings that are affordable at the Housing Authority payment standard, they say no Section 8. Others, you call them up, they say no Section 8. But there are landlords who take Section 8. But it's time-consuming and it's very discouraging. But I always say to people, it's like salesmen say, every no gets you closer to yes. That there's a lot of people out there, most of them are going to say no, someone will say yes. But it's discouraging, it takes a lot of persistence. The other thing is that many of our clients, a lot of these ads, you only reply by email. A lot of clients, they don't have internet access, they don't have computer skills, they don't have an email address, sometimes don't have a phone, don't have transportation, need a lot of direct support. So housing search is its own separate intensive job. So it's difficult for a mental health case manager to really be dedicated to housing search because it's a different job. So one of the things that we're hoping to put in place is more housing search assistance. We don't have that now, but that's a thing that we need.
I would like to make a comment as a landlord to that also. I would get 50 calls a day from people who wanted housing because I did list that I wanted only second income people. Only people that had disabilities. Not one of them had an application filled out.
Exactly.
And so I would say, you want to make yourself look good on paper and have 20 of these applications filled out.
Gina, you're giving my speech.
Okay. I'll let you go ahead then. Because they didn't seem to know.
You only know what you've learned. If you haven't learned that, if you haven't had to do it, how would you know? So that's why we're here. Let me plow through this. Landlords, they can check your credit, your housing history, your criminal background. They can check that, and they do. They can exclude you for those reasons. Lots of our clients have barriers like that to housing. We often have success, if you have a landlord who's listening, who's sympathetic, with making a case of what's different, what's changed. That was then. What happened was disability-related. That was then. This is what's different now. These are the supports in place. You have letters of recommendation and reference. Those things can be overcome sometimes, not always. Having a rental resume or a completed generic application, along with running a free credit report on Credit Karma, and having those things with you, ready, prepared, when you go to see a place and talk to a landlord, makes you look good, makes you look like you're ready to rent. These landlords, mostly business people, this is a business transaction. Even landlords who are sympathetic, want to be helpful, they're making a big financial deal with you. They want to rent to someone they think is going to be a good, that they can make a contract.
And explain your difficulties. People in the $200,000 a year bracket have bad clarity.
Last thing before I let my friends talk a little bit.
They have their mental illness. They don't have the patience to sit out.
They don't have the wherewithal to do that. Everybody has mental illness.
So we,
yeah.
They really have a mental illness. They cannot hold someone. Right.
So we talked about how difficult it can be to find affordable housing. To me, that makes it doubly sad to see people lose their housing. My work to me sometimes seems bookended by those wonderful days when people get a place, they move in, they're happy, it's great, and those other days when people are evicted, they're hospitalized, they never get back home, they lose their place, this happens. So along with getting housing assistance, finding housing, we need to talk about keeping housing, maintaining your housing. Carrie, both of these ladies could talk about this. Tenants lose their housing because they don't pay their rent sometimes. That doesn't happen to a lot of our clients as much because they have a payee often who pays, but it does happen. Moving other people in who aren't supposed to live there, homeless people or friends who come in, they want to help them, they can't get rid of them, they violate their lease, they get evicted and their friend is gone. What else do we see? Smoking in the unit, property damage, like taking down your smoke detectors so you can smoke in your unit, and other things, noise, disruptive behavior by tenants or guests. Hey, it wasn't me, it was him. Doesn't matter, your guest, your house, you're evicted. All a variety of other problems, whether symptomatic or substance-related, can get you evicted. And y'all know that a loss of insight and rejection of services is often a feature of an episode of illness. People get ill, they don't realize they're ill, they don't want to hear about it. And behavior that will get you evicted doesn't always get you hell. So we have situations where people are acting out badly in their housing, but they can't be involuntarily hospitalized or held long enough to get well, and they get evicted. Then they're homeless, and they're gravely disabled, and then they're held. So in some ways, in situations, it could be easier to get evicted than it can to be involuntarily treated. Difficult for me as someone who worked patients' rights all those years to seem to be in favor of involuntary treatment, But sometimes that's all that you can do. So we sometimes are left hoping something will happen. We have some opening to get someone into treatment before they're evicted. I have situations like that right now. And we feel really sadly powerless sometimes. We can't always make things work. Yeah.
Jim, you mentioned getting a free credit report from Credit Karma, and also a good idea to put together a rental summary. Would you or anyone have an example of what you would consider a nice rental summary if we would like that to help someone?
Yeah, I don't have it on me, but I didn't bring a lot of forms and things. But yeah, there are rental resumes that you can get online. There's a generic rental application from the California Realtors Association. Some landlords, when you call them, they will just tell you to bring that. Available on the internet, and that will have a, then you have all the addresses, phones of where you lived before. No one remembers this stuff. Even filling that out though can be a challenge for clients because they don't remember and don't know. Sometimes I don't remember all this stuff and can't find it. So, what helps people to stay in housing? Having some outside activity, going to MHCAN, Community Connection, involved a church, a hobby, a volunteer job. When people come from group settings, you know, what you think about is, I want to get out away from all these people, be on my own, and not realize that being in that place, even with its downside, had some structure. There were people around to talk to. You had a routine that structured your day. It can be particularly challenging for mental health clients. They have all free time and nothing to do. So we really try to get people involved in something. So treatment services, housing support services, in-home support services, all of these things can help people to maintain their housing, and they're important in successful independent living. But the support services, they're not magic. They're not magic. If people aren't in the space to accept support, it doesn't help. So we have situations where we're all over people, and they don't want it. They're not hearing it.
It
absolutely is. It absolutely is. It's a big motivator. So if you, and this is one of the things they talk with people about, is that if you that's a foothold that you can get. If someone is motivated to keep their housing, you have a place to start talking. Sometimes people just don't want to hear it anymore. But the last thing I want to say is ultimately, these are independent adults that we're dealing with who need some support. But it's up to each individual to accept support if they need it, learn to be a responsible tenant and a good neighbor, and stay housed. So I'm going to let my friends talk a little bit. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah.
Hi, good evening. I'm Carrie from Encompass. I'm just curious, anyone here has a family member or in Encompass housing right now? Anyone? You do? Well, great. So we are unique in Santa Cruz County in that we own all our own properties, so we don't have the issue with master leasing or having somebody not like you and just want to kick you out for no reason. So the good news is we own our own property, and all of our clients are psychiatrically disabled. So we have 157 units of housing. That ranges, I have 56 one-bedroom apartments, all with a very long waiting list. The good news about that is we honor our waiting lists and we keep them up to date. And if you're on that wait list, you will be moved up to the top at some point. I hope that's good news. In a world that's not so good news when you have housing problems. So the rest of the housing that we have is shared environments. It's their homes. Everyone has their own bedroom in all of our housing, but they might have in a home, it would be a shared kitchen, a shared living room, and shared bathrooms. But you do have your own bedroom. All of our properties are low income or extremely low. Some of them are subsidized by HUD, by the state. And all of them, even if they're not subsidized, are 30% of the client's income. Yes?
average fee?
What other fees?
Yeah, what is the average fee for, say,
well, they're all different because they have different contract rents, depending on the where they're funded or when they came about, budget-based income. The average rent for one of our properties, they range from 150 to 400 on average.
And this is set as a percentage of income.
Yeah, it's 3% of your income. Most of our clients are on SSI. The average income for one of our clients is $950 across the board for all 157. Yes?
If my son's on SSI, so it would be 30% of the income.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. So because we manage our wait list very tightly, because we don't want to have so many on there, you'll never see the light of day and never get up. We opened our four of our properties a couple months ago, and within 3 days we had over 70 to 100 people on the list. So we did close them. A couple of our other HUD subsidized properties that are shared living environment, that is a home with a shared kitchen, a shared living room, that waiting list is still open. And the wait list is long, but not impossible. So I always encourage everyone to sign up whenever they can, at least for our shared environments, because we try, when we can, to move people into a single living environment apartment if that can be made possible, because that's what everyone wants. Yes?
When you say wait list is long, are you talking about 6 months or a year?
I'm talking years.
Years?
Yeah.
And
one of my last clients had been on the wait list that we just placed a couple months ago, 3 years.
And when a person's name comes up but they're not able at that time to take it, do they, are they just off the list, or can they stay
no.
at the top of the list for a while?
They will stay at the top of the list. You can refuse two times. And then after two times, you're removed from the list. You can also be on multiple lists. So just because you're signed up for Grace Commons or you're signed up for Lotus, you're signed up for Casa Linda, which is on Maceo, you can sign up on other ones also, any of them. Yes?
Carrie, you mentioned you have one housing opportunity open still, and I didn't catch the name of that.
No, actually, I have no vacancies.
Did you say there was a waiting list?
Wait list, yes. I still have several properties. The wait lists are open. I have brought some applications tonight. So after that, I'm happy to stay up here and talk to you about the different sites. And I also did bring applications for those that would like them.
Are those available online?
That is a good question. I think so. Are they?
I don't think so. But
I never go online. That's horrible.
But they're available at your office.
Let me tell you. I will check with our IT department. If it isn't, I'm going to get it on there for you, okay?
But they're available at your office.
They're always available at our office. And we're on at 380 Encinal in Santa Cruz, Suite 200. We just moved, for those that know where we used to be located.
Are you to get our request?
I'm sorry. 380 Encinal, Suite 200. We just moved to a big new space.
Okay.
Well, are you all looking to acquire properties, and how do you do that?
We have developed properties over the years. That's why we own a lot of them. We just did Lotus Apartments on Bromer Street. We purchased the property in 2013 with the help of the redevelopment agency, who had to expense some funds when the state was coming and taking away all the money. And luckily there was MHSA funds available, and we spent $3.6 million on that project and purchasing and rehabbing 12 units. Five of them are mental health units. Five of them are for our TAE clients, which are transitional age youth, our foster age youth transitioning out of foster care into adulthood. And the other two are for extremely low income.
Do you ever mortgage them? I mean, or do you, if you buy a property, you get all the funding, so it's all paid up front?
Well, we haven't, that's what we used to do. It's very difficult now. I don't know if we're going to be able to do it in the future. It's become almost impossible to do it. We had a great landlord. We had some funds that just sort of fell into our lap, and we were able to make it work. But that's going to be few and far between in the future.
I'm just curious to know, maybe I guess the main reason that an opening would become available. Like, is it somebody that moves
sure.
away?
Sure. So let me, talk a little bit, expand on that a little bit. So our clients, first of all, you'll be happy to know we never look at credit. If we ever looked at credit, we wouldn't house anybody. So number one, we never look at credit. Everyone I work with in the property management team is trained and knows your son, your daughter, your brother, your sister. So you're walking into an environment where we know you. We don't know all the stories, but we know a lot of the stories. And so rental histories, we like rental histories, but a lot of time our rental histories don't look like most people's. Homeless, in and out of care. So going in, we know and we hope that it'll be a stable environment. We have housing support teams that are assigned to every one of our properties. They have monthly, weekly, bi-weekly, depending on the house, depending on the need, meetings. So our housing support team, we have 5 people that support every one of our properties, and they take that property on and work with that group of individuals. Jim also, there are county mental health, along with our housing support team, many of our clients have county mental health support members. And so they're supported in their household more than they would be in just, you know, you take a voucher or you just go to a market rate landlord. There is site. We have our own maintenance teams that surface every one of the sites who are trained. We do a lot. We do a lot for our clients. We change light bulbs. They have issues that need special attention. They're really concerned about a window lock or, you know, something that a landlord would just say, I don't think that's your problem, buddy, but that becomes our problem. So, and our maintenance people are trained to notice differences because they're in the unit so much. So they're a huge part of what we do. You know, they'll go into an apartment and say, you know, John doesn't seem like he's doing well. You know, maybe his apartment used to be great, and now it's just a complete disaster. And so, you know, we'll call in the housing support counselor. We'll call Jim or one of his coordinators. Say, hey, could you check on, you know, Jim? He's not doing too well. So there's a lot of eyes on this person. We're in the units a lot. Sometimes they love it. Sometimes they don't because of the kind of supported housing we have. We have state inspections, we have city home inspections, we have HUD inspections, we have MORS, we have REACT. So we have a lot of inspections because we're subsidized in many of our sites. And sometimes they like it, sometimes they don't, but at least we're in the units a lot. So that's a good thing. Hang on 1 second. So we know your client, we're going to take good care of them, and even with all the support and all the care, things happen. So in our housing, you can leave for a while. In our supported housing, you can be gone for up to 120 days if you're in a medical facility, and your rent is still paid. We also give lots of warning notices. We give lots of reminders. And we hope that if they're having problems, they can go to one of our care sites are such as Telos or EDC. Those are both Encompass run organizations, service centers. Also, Second Story is run by Encompass. If a tenant is having problems with one of their roommates, we encourage them to go to Second Story just to get out, get away, get some help from a peer. So that helps tremendously. But there are times when our clients can do very well for a long time and they don't take their meds. Or they're just having a mental health breakdown. We work very hard at keeping our tenants housed, as we are very clear and we know all too well that when they decompensate and they lose their housing, they're on the street. Very rarely do they go anywhere else. So So we know they're back on the street, and that doesn't feel good for anybody. But there are times when that happens. So most often, if a vacancy comes up, it's been somebody who's been terminated, to be honest, because we'd have to look at the overall well-being. In a shared environment, we have the right to protect the other clients in that household, even though we've tried hard to keep them housed. We can't always do that. So yes, usually terminated. Sometimes they move, but most often it's a termination. And we do have long-term clients. We've had clients that have lived with us for 22 years. 22 years. The average is about 10. Yeah.
When you select clients to live in different houses that you have,
mm-hmm.
is there any consideration given to the diagnosis of their mental illness or compatibility or?
Well, as the property management team, we are very clear we never want to know the diagnosis. We never know it. We don't want to know it. That's up to the county mental health team and our housing support team. They do. We don't want to know. We do know that they have a psychiatric disability because we have to have that in order to get them into our housing. Never know, don't want to know. But we do look at compatibility in our shared housing environments as much as we can within fair housing. We don't want to just say no to somebody because we don't think that they're going to fit. But if it's not going to be a good fit, absolutely.
Do you do well-being checks?
Absolutely.
Is the gateway into Encompass via county mental health as well?
No, you can just walk right in through our door.
No, okay.
But we would, and at the time you sign up, you don't have to have your psych disability confirmation. We just have you sign up. Once your name comes up on the wait list, then we'll call you and check that.
Put in a quick word about the wait list.
Yeah.
A thing about the wait list, if you sign up anywhere, Encompass Housing Authority, you get on a wait list and you change your address, you have to remember to tell them your new address. It is a sad story that I see people think they're on wait lists and they a letter was sent, they didn't reply, or two letters were sent. That people get dropped off that Housing Authority wait list because they changed address and didn't tell anyone.
So. That's a huge part of it, staying in contact. And when you sign up on these wait lists, you know, maybe, you know, that could be your son or daughter's current address. Make it somebody who lives somewhere where that letter is going to get there. That phone number is going to get, and you can contact the person. Yeah. So that's important.
I have a question. My son has been declined for Social Security 3 times, and we're still working on it. He's delusional and doesn't think he's disabled. You know, it's a long story, but, you know, he certainly deserves it, but he's hasn't said the right things. So, say he gets it. I'm working with somebody now to get to reapply. He gets the check. It's up to him to pay you, or do you?
Well, all our housing is independent. Yes.
Yeah.
But a lot of people have payee services or someone that pays for them. Mm-hmm. But
okay.
We require that everyone who moves into our housing be independent. They can have in-home support services, HSS. They can have somebody who helps them, but they must be independent.
But he has to take that money and pay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's pretty good with money.
Sometimes when people are approved for Social Security disability benefits, the doctor will say that they need to have a representative payee because they can't manage the money in their own interest.
Yeah.
So many of our clients have representative payees. Many don't. I want to be sure that Patrice has a chance to talk about her Front Street housing, and then we'll take more questions. Then, well, yeah.
And we'll stick around.
Just, Terry, I just want to be clear. If your family member has a diagnosis and is receiving services through county mental health that has yet to be approved for SSI, they're not eligible for Encompass housing? Or
they have zero income.
Does he have any kind of income? Could he have family income?
Right now, he's very underemployed.
Okay, so he could be at one of our federally subsidized properties. He could be considered what's zero income, and we do take zero income clients.
Without
that,
having
he'd have to have a diagnosis.
For SSI.
You have to have a disability verification.
Disability verification.
A doctor to sign that he has a disability.
But okay. but you don't have to have income.
Okay, but I'm unsure about, you know, having a diagnosis, but not yet getting SSI. That's a weird place to be.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking for housing because, through the county.
Because most often you will have benefits. But
you would have to have SSI.
No, we do take zero income. At federally subsidized sites. Only.
Okay.
Thank you, Carrie.
Okay. I'm Patrice, so I'm from Front Street Supported Housing, and I'm going to try to kind of talk about the things that are different about our program than some of the things that we've heard from Jim and Carrie. So I'm going to tell you a few basic things, some different things that we do. And so we have our program is exclusively for county clients, people who are in the Santa Cruz County system of care. They are referred to us through the county case managers. One of the main differences between Encompass Housing and our housing is our housing, we don't have these long and lengthy wait lists. It's more of if we have availability, you can get into housing soon if we have availability. So we have 44 placements. Most of ours are master leased, not all of them, but most of them are master leased. And that's that. What that means is we have to make our owners, our property owners, happy. They have to be happy with us. So we do have a property management team where our property managers work with the owners and they work with the tenants. Our folks who come into our housing sign a month-to-month rental agreement with property management, and they kind of are an interface between the property owners and the property and the tenant. And as housing support staff, we kind of try to bridge the gap when things come up between what the needs are for the landlord and supporting the client to be successful in the housing. So with, again, master leasing, we have to be very mindful of the owner, the property owner, so that we can continue to have a good relationship there. Some of our housing is not master leased, a few is not. Mostly we have two-bedroom apartments, so everybody has their own bedroom. Most of our housing are two-bedroom apartments, but we have a couple houses, a six-bedroom, two three-bedrooms, another two-bedroom, and four single units, so a little bit of a variety. The rent is 40% of income, similar to what Jim and Carrie were talking about in terms of Section 8. Section 8 is often 30. It's 40% subsidized through the county. And again, whatever that individual's income is, most frequently SSI, then it's 40% of their income, which does include utilities, the basic utilities as well. And not everybody has SSI. Most people do. That's most of our clients. Sometimes people are working and have an income. Sometimes it's a combination of some SSI and some income. Whatever it is, it's 40%. The only way that it would not really work for someone is if their income level exceeded what the cost of the property would be to just rent it. Then it doesn't make sense because there's no subsidy, no need for them to, you know, rent from us. Let's see. There's a $400 security deposit. People sign a standard month-to-month rental agreement. So you're signing, you know, just a month-to-month. Some of our units accept Section 8. Not all of them do. It's up to the property owner if they accept it or not. So if people have Section 8 and want to use it, it has to be one of the units where the owner accepts it. Most people in our housing do not have Section 8, but some people do. Individuals continue to work with the county. They have maybe a county coordinator, county doctor, but then they also have the housing support team who meets with them in their unit or in the community, but you know, frequently in the unit, to provide support to help to maintain success in housing, which is basically meeting those landlord requirements of keeping the place neat and tidy, not disturbing, you know, neighbors, noise. So our team, we generally meet with everybody. It's usually about every other week. The support is individualized and tailored to whatever that individual might benefit from. Some people need help with budgeting and getting food. Other people might need help with keeping units clean. Other people might have issues with substance use. Some other people with medication. Our team also does have two medication support nurses that work with anybody in the county system of care, including individuals in Encompass or our housing. And they're seen weekly for medication support. And, you know, the goals in working with the individual, our major goal is to try to have them be successful staying in housing. And we have had individuals for as long as 20 years in our housing. It's intended to be permanent, but sometimes people do come in and they're not ready and, you know, it's less than a year and they're not ready. And you know, some of the things that come up when in listening to the discussion is sometimes individuals aren't ready. Going into housing and living independently is kind of a big deal. There's a lot of skills that one must have to be able to do that. You need to feed yourself. You need to manage your money, even if you have a payee, and many of our folks have a payee. But you still need to feed yourself. You still need to cook. You need to get out into the community. You need to clean your room, clean the bathroom, get along with your housemates. So there's a lot of skills, and not everybody's ready for that. The difference with our housing is what we do look for in our housing is readiness in that moment. So when we have an opening, which varies, it just depends on if we're full or if you know, we have an opening. If we have an opening, we let Jim know. He lets county coordinators know. I do have a bit of a wait list now, but I don't always have a wait list because, again, the intention with this housing is it's more in the moment. It's more, okay, somebody's ready, they need housing, where could they go, what's available, and if we have something available, we can get people in pretty quickly. What I look for, we have an interview. I do look for some readiness for skills, readiness to be able to live independently, and look for some of that compatibility. People get to come and look at the place, meet the other housemates. People have a chance to talk to each other, weigh in on how they feel in terms of if it's compatible for all parties, and we make a decision after those processes are done. So that does mean that the wait time can vary tremendously. I had a lot of openings this year. I counted in the last fiscal year, and we had like 17 move in and move out. That was like, I never had that. That was a very unusual, it was a busy year, and my preference is not to have so many people coming and going. Because if I don't have openings, that means people are successful, but then there's no openings. But people can stay there for an extended period of time, a long period of time. We have people that once they might be successful for us for a long time and then be ready to move into even more independent housing. Or maybe their Section 8 voucher comes up. And so it can be a stepping stone. Our team also provides support for individuals not in our housing as well. So we have medication support as well as some other housing support. Again, some of those differences is that more immediate availability. And so that's why oftentimes when people are in need of housing, they're checking with us. You know, do we have housing available?
Mm-hmm. Patrice, my son has been at your housing for about 2 years now. Mm-hmm. He came out of Casa Pacific. And I just wanted to say how wonderful it's been for him, the support that you all have provided to him.
That's great.
He's been very stable.
He's been very stable. He's been great. We really love him. Yeah. Yeah,
and I did wonder, how do you get the master leases? How do you find these landlords who are willing?
It's a lot of work. We have our property management side does that piece, but we're also limited in terms of the funding of the subsidies. We need to have matching subsidies. Even if we have a willing property owner, we kind of have to have a subsidy, and that comes from the county, and there's, you know, only so much funding for that. But what our property manager, Regina Mendoza, does is she just goes out and kind of cold call and kind of selling the program and saying, you know, hey, we'll manage your property for you. You'll get rent every single month because the rent comes from us, not the client. The tenant pays us, but we pay the property owner. So we can tell them the strong points, which is you're going to get rent every month. You're not going to have any downtime because you're going to get your rent whether someone's in there or not. You have some backup. We do have a maintenance team as well with the property management, and they help to determine if whatever issue might be coming up, if it's a tenant responsibility, if it's something that Front Street will kind of come in and help and repair, and we don't need to talk about that to the property owner, or if it's the property owner's responsibility to take care of whatever that maintenance need is. But it's a lot of work, and I think initially it was really hard to get all of the property owners that we did. We try really hard to hang on to them and keep them, and that's a big challenge at times, because sometimes people, you know, are not doing well. And sometimes there's disturbances to neighbors, to other housemates. Sometimes substance use becomes a problem. One issue that comes up a lot is what we find are our clients, our tenants, are very kind people. And when they see other people in need, they will often, well, you can stay with me, or take a shower here, or yes, use my phone, and I'll feed you. If they do that too much, too long, people begin to take advantage of them, and then they're hanging around, and they have people, and that becomes a problem. So those are the kinds of things that we try to help with, where we try to kind of run interference and keep the property owner kind of, you know, that they're not hearing anything negative about the property or issues coming up. We try to handle all that. And I have to say, it keeps us really busy. It keeps us really busy.
All those things are in the general population, too.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we do say to the property owners at times.
At least your clients aren't going to set up a meth lab.
Right. Well, hopefully not. We don't know for sure, but hopefully not. But it's very true, and our property manager is really good about doing that. And it's like, well, I know lots of people who have that issue and that problem. That's not, because again, it's a separation. You know, they're not talking to the owners about diagnoses. They don't even have to know it's a mental health disability, just disability, and we're going to kind of manage this. And then we get the option of deciding who is able to, you know, rent from. And again, we don't do credit reports. I think another major thing, and I'm going to get to you, sorry, that a lot of times felonies or some other criminal, histories will keep people out of housing, and that isn't necessarily the case for us. I'm going to get some of that information. Hopefully I'm going to get all of that information. And we know that happens, but that's not going to be an automatic preventing someone from getting housing, which is really important and critical, because there's really nowhere else for some of these folks to go. And so maybe, depending if there's some compatibility or some things that might be really, this really is not a good idea, this isn't going to work, we won't do it, but it's not an automatic exclusion.
How come you don't have a wait list? You know, fourth quarter you have 157 in the wait list.
We don't keep a wait list.
So how
Do you want to talk about that?
Because Encompass takes applications from anyone who can get a disability verification. Don't have to be referred. That's because of the way they're funded by HUD, largely. Front Street is our county-funded supported housing program. You have to be referred by a county case manager. So it's a smaller pool of people. So these are two different models of supported housing, but they both work really well. And the one thing that they have in common that they do is they protect the private landlord. When you have someone go into housing with a landlord and fail out, it's not just that they lose their housing. Landlords can be burned so badly that they won't do business with you anymore. I know 180-2020 has had this issue. We had landlords who were sympathetic and they placed people, had such a bad experience that they say, I want to help, but no more. That doesn't happen.
Is there a similar criteria, or I have heard you mention several different kinds of criteria for how to get into various housing situations? So is there, what is the criteria? So you're referred by county?
Right, so it's somebody who is actively being case managed by county mental health. So they have a coordinator and they're making the referral. This person is a good candidate, this person is ready, this person needs, this person is looking for housing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like you have to go through all the inspections that Encompass has to go through.
We have some different things. Some of our housing has some different inspections. Maybe not as many because some of the funding comes via the county. So for that, no. We have another site where funding comes from somewhere else, and for that, yes. So because our subsidy is coming via the county, we're not having to do whatever the inspections are there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see if there's anything else I wanted to mention. Again, people can have payees or self-pay. People can utilize in-home support services. We do that a lot because it can often be a really challenging thing for people to manage living independently. And again, people are living with other individuals. It's shared housing. And that's one of the things that is one of the most challenging things for us, because getting along with another person, living with another person is not easy for any of us. So that's often something that we spend a lot of time with, which is partially why I really look at that when I'm kind of looking at, you know, who's coming in with who, because that can make or break whether people can be successful. I think that's about it. Any questions? You know, our housing is really for people who are like, they're ready now for the housing. It's not a list that they've been on for several years, but look, they're ready now. They maybe were in the hospital, they maybe were in a program, they maybe were at EDC, they're looking good now, they should be able to live in the community, and so this provides that opportunity.
Do you have like one-bedroom units?
We have 4 one-bedroom units. Most of them are 2-bedroom.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When we master lease, and I'm not sure that I'm the best person to answer this question, you know, we're contracting with that property owner, kind of like a lease, just like, you know, a tenant would be contracting with us. So there are, you know, notice it, there's certain criteria, and I think for the most part it's standard and basic. So certain criteria, like people can't have guests overnight for more than 10 days.
No,
you know?
I'm talking about,
okay.
You run the contract with the clients.
Mm-hmm.
But your contract with the landlord.
Right.
Can the landlord sit with you and discuss criteria for property at all?
Like, for example, what do you have in mind?
For instance, you know, maybe I want to open up a unit and I want my son to be there, but I got 3 other bedrooms or 4 bedrooms. And I say, your criteria is quite simply that my son has a place to stay.
Yeah, Gary, do you say that?
This is Gary. Offer of a property.
So my name is Gary Butler. I'm the vice president of Front Street. I'm sitting in the back just to give needed support if needed. Huge fundraiser. So our contracts, our lease agreements with the property owners are just that. They're just lease agreements. So whatever requirements we have with them are written into the rental agreement that we have. That's usually a year long lease. So the worst thing that they could do is they could say we're not going to renew the rental agreement that property owner has with rentry, and then we would lose that unit. But I wouldn't say that they have the ability, unless it was written in the contract, which we don't generally do, for them to have criteria in addition to what the rental agreement says. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, we're not a lot of flexibility.
However, I think the question more is, at the beginning there's a discussion about family members being interested in maybe, you know, put up a house, but they didn't want to provide the housing support services. So if they went into an agreement with Front Street, one of the bedrooms went to their family member, the other three were open to Front Street to rent out to other family members without the possibility. Is that what I understood you
to
say?
Yeah.
So the property owner had a four-bedroom house, and they wanted one bedroom for them and three bedrooms for Front Street.
Yeah.
What we would have is a rental agreement for those three bedrooms, and we probably would not touch the extra bedroom. I think we would be unlikely to get into that kind of lease agreements. We would probably do either the whole house or none of the house. I think we would not necessarily be looking to provide property management for individuals that weren't a part of the system of care right this second.
But they were. They were. The individual is part of the system of care.
That would be, I would imagine, that would still have to be, that individual would need to be kind of within the county's referral.
Yeah.
They already have a, what do you call the people that take care of the
case manager?
Already has case management, all that stuff. There's no housing available, as we well know, you just said.
I think if you're interested in that, you, Gary, should talk.
I want to have another unit, but I want to provide more units for everyone for assisted living SLE.
I think we can make that work out.
Yes.
I think it's interesting. Yeah, it's an
interesting
outline. Yeah.
We'd have to have the rent subsidy for the other tenants.
Right. Yeah.
And that rent, the number of rent subsidies that we have, we get from
my checkbook. No.
The count.
Well, there's always a possibility of what he said, which is you have the trust thing where we can pay into the trust and he can subsidize besides the county. For those of us who have people out there that we can afford to help,
Well, I think this is an interesting conversation.
Serving the rest of the system.
Right. That Pam.
Yeah,
and Gary.
Actually, it's one of the things we've been talking more recently, actually with Cheryl, about kind of public-private partnerships to get more people to come.
Yeah, and I think it's a good direction to go in, because I think that everybody's at the point where we need as many different options as we can think of and creatively manage to put together
in order to
help.
And with that said, if you haven't had this and you're interested in that idea, can you please fill this out so we can try to do a little coordination around that?
One last question.
Uh-huh. So my question is similar, but not the same. So what if one is on SSI and maybe a member of the
application? Did you provide
housing?
Yes. I'll give them both.
Whatever
they
do,
they
have
to send it to
pay the rent for that person here.
Okay.
How does that person get a voucher or whatever they need to get that rent subsidized?
You know, I see everybody leaving here. So if we could just have this one last question answered, and then, because it's kind of hard to hear. And then we'll break up, and then people will be here to answer further questions after the meeting.
So if a person is on disability and they have housing that could be made available for them, but they need to have rent paid for them, told me that it's the housing shortage that's the big issue. But what if this person has housing available?
You mean that would be rented to them if they could afford it?
Correct.
I don't have an immediate answer. You can't get a Section 8 voucher. If you have to plus care vouchers, you have to be chronically homeless to be eligible.
So if he were homeless for a year, then he could get it. So
and be in case known.
Well, he's been in case known and he's one of your clients.
All right. Thank you guys, for coming. And thank you for our panel. One last announcement, Mental Health Advisory Board meeting is tomorrow at Emmeline. Second Story will be presenting.
Yeah, 2 separate ones.
Okay.
This is the unsubsidized, and this is the low income.